Welcome to the Amber May Show. So glad to have you friends joining me on another episode, because today I have the executive producer of The Sound of Freedom, and he is joining us today, and we get the backstory of how this film got made and operations that Paul Hutchinson went on as a deep undercover. And so we're going to find out more about the film. We're going to find out more about his operations and how you and I can be better advocates for these children that are being trafficked. So that's coming up on today's show. Please, 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 please like, share, and subscribe. Please like, share, and subscribe this episode. It's really important that it gets out far and wide. If you believe in what I'm doing and would like to become an angel investor, the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com. Click the donate button and donate whatever you can donate. You can be a $5 monthly subscriber by going to theambermayshow.locals.com and subscribe there. But I want to let you know about an election summit coming up on August 16th and 17th. We've all been waiting for hope and a plan that secures our elections forever. And it all comes down to this. Day one, it's all about hope. Hope for our elections. Hope for keeping our nation free and fair. Day two, the plan's going to be revealed. This has never been thought of before. It's never been done in world history, and everyone will embrace this plan no matter who they are, what party you belong in. It's about saving our election platform right away, immediately. And the only way this doesn't work if we don't have a million people watching. So if you can go down to lindellevent.com, enter your referral code AMBER, and you're going to receive a free gift. So that's lindellevent.com. Use referral code AMBER for your free gift. So please like, share, and subscribe. Check the links below. All of our sponsors are in the links below. And you can go to theambermayshow.com, click the promo section, and see our sponsors there. Well, coming up right now is Paul Hutchinson. Just like I told you folks, I have the executive producer of Sound of Freedom, Paul Hutchinson, joining us today. I am so excited about this interview. I've seen The Sound of Freedom twice, so welcome to our program.
Thank you, Amber. Appreciate you having me on.
So I think this film, I don't have to tell you, you already know, but I think this film was so well done because the actors that they chose in this film were really believable in as the characters they played. The bad guys were really believable. The good guys were really believable. And what I liked the most is I was kind of nervous going into the movie. I'm like, how much are we going to see? Because I already been following child trafficking for a while. There's, you know, I have a whole resource page on my website. And yeah, I think we needed to see it, but not like graphically see it. And I was so impressed with how well this movie showed child trafficking in a way that us as an audience can really resonate without it being too graphic. No graphic at all, really. But we still saw the hurt. We still saw the pain. And I just want to say thank you for your part in playing this. I mean, I'm sure you felt the same way once you saw the completion of the film.
Yeah. In fact, that was so important for us to do right from the beginning. And we met with a lot of different people that could bring this message to light. And one of the reasons why we went with Alejandro Monteverde and Eduardo Verástegui and their team is that I went to watch a movie called Little Boy. And if you haven't watched it, you should go see Little Boy. So Little Boy came out about 8 years ago, and I was at a Grammys after party in Los Angeles. And I was there with President Vicente Fox of Mexico. Pierce Brosnan was there, got some pictures with Pierce. And Vicente Fox was super excited about helping us in fighting trafficking in Mexico, et cetera. Well, then I was introduced to Eduardo Verástegui, who was a pretty famous actor. In fact, multiple times I was with Eduardo and the president of Mexico, and everybody wanted pictures with Eduardo. Nobody cared about the president. And so, but he said, Armando, I'm having this screening of this movie that's coming out called Little Boy. And I had other meetings, and my girlfriend at the time said, oh, Paul, he's like really popular. We should go to, okay. So canceled my meetings, went to watch Little Boy, cried the whole time. And afterwards, I said, brother, I need to tell you a story about what happened in Colombia less than a year and a half ago. And I told him of my involvement and the children that were rescued and the Homeland Security agent that recruited me and the whole story, which I'll tell on your show here. And he got super emotional. And he said, Armando, we need to make this into a movie. And I said, absolutely. That's what we've been wanting to do, because we realized that just going undercover and rescuing these children was never going to fix the problem. Mm-mm. Somehow we needed to create a movement, and that movement could only happen by getting the word out with a movie or in interviews like people like you. In fact, Amber, like back at the time of Abraham Lincoln, it wasn't the guys that were rescuing the slaves that created the biggest difference. It was people like you. It was Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was the media of the age. She was the voice that got that information out to good people so they could see what was going on in the South and rise up and say, no way, not on our watch. Mm-hmm. In fact, years later, when Abraham Lincoln met Harriet, he shook her hand. He said, so you're the little lady that wrote the book that started the big war. And so today, if we're going to fix this problem, yep, it's going to take a collective of all of us. And so after watching that movie, Little Boy, and then another one they did before that called Bella, that was all on abortion. And thousands and thousands of people are alive today because their mothers watched that film. And these guys and their ability to take a very sensitive subject, mm-hmm, and make it into something that could really motivate people and inspire people was something that we needed to have happen. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the history of why we chose this team. And they created such a masterpiece, in making it so that, yes, it's, you're mad enough to do something about it, but you're not sickened and you're not right, like wanting to throw up. And so, yeah, that's the backstory of why it turned out so well, is finding the right director and the right producer to make it happen.
I was just so impressed that you didn't have to be graphic in this film and you still got that message across loud and clear. Like the whole time I was watching the film the first time, I couldn't stop praying. And my heart was just like broken for the dad who came and found he didn't find his kids anywhere. And then I was so broken for all the children and the separation of the sister and the brother. And I think you were portrayed in the film, correct? Were you, yes, the rich millionaire or the, yes, rich guy in the film?
Yes, yes.
God, no, bless you, man. That, tell me about that operation, because I'm watching that and I'm like on pins and needles, like, you know, how is this going to go down? Especially, okay, was that fake, the thing with Tim Ballard and the head honcho guy fighting over the boy? Was that just for extra dramatic effect to drive the story home, or was,
yeah,
that a,
so I'll tell you, there was some dramatic flexibility that was taken in the film, but I'll tell you this, every bad guy is real, and we took about 8 different operations and brought them all together into one storyline.
Wow.
Okay, so the little girl that, mm-hmm, they were after, she was actually there. They brought her to that party in real life. So she was rescued at that one. But we had some other things that we did later in other countries where I actually went in as the doctor. I've got pictures and videos. It was in Haiti. And this was after Tim had decided to go public. So deep cover stuff was dangerous for anybody that goes public. So I've been deep, sure, undercover for the last 10 years. In fact, I only came out on my first interviews about 3.5-4 months ago, because I knew that there needed to be more voices in sharing these stories, and I couldn't continue undercover. So I've led or played a key part in over 70 undercover rescue missions in 15 countries since the one in Colombia. So we took a few different stories. That little boy was real, But he was, while Tim was still in Homeland Security, some agents were able to bring him in. That little boy did meet Tim and give him the little necklace. But the girl that we were looking for in Colombia wasn't really his sister, right?
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. Okay. So there wasn't a tie there. That was multiple operations together that we brought him in. Now, their backstory was similar. How they were taken was similar. All of that. So they wove them all into that story.
So I want to pause while you talk about this because I want to ask a question. So in this film, it was a talent agent scouting these kids. Is that the typical way these kids are trafficked through supposed talent agents?
It's not typical. Well, it is typical. It's not the main way.
Okay.
But in this case, for sure. So the modeling queen was real, and she did have a fake modeling agency. And they were going around to towns in South America and letting the parents know, oh, your daughter is so pretty, your son is so cute, they should come to this photo shoot and that we could help him be a model. And so, yeah, they're lured in with that. Now, some of them, the children are still living at home and being groomed by people that want them to be a model. We had one where we were after this guy who was an American citizen, had abused well over 100 children, selling them to rich Americans coming down to Latin America. This was a different country. And he was bragging that he could get children to take their clothes off within three meetings. He would meet them at the mall, these little 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, and convince them that he was a model scout and start making pornography. They were still living at home, right? And then they would get abused, et cetera. So there's upwards of 70%, and this is important for your audience to understand, upwards of 70% of trafficked children sleep in their own bed at night. Okay, now how does that happen? The majority of trafficking is not some affluent family who gets their child kidnapped at the park and they never see him again. There's too much news going on and too many people. The children that are at most risk of being taken are ones in the foster system, that are ones from broken families, they're runaways, or in their own home, they're being sold by their own mothers, by their own fathers, by their uncles, and it happens all the time. All the time. And people don't understand how prevalent this is and what a huge high percentage of children that are being abused in their own homes right now. And so the statistical probability of a trafficked child being just one that was taken and something like that, that happens. We found a lot of them, but it's not the norm. A lot of the children that were at these rescue missions were, like, for example, we had one in Latin America. She was 13. She was being babysat by her aunt. Her aunt was working with the traffickers. Her aunt told her, listen, you're gonna lose your virginity anyway sometime. If you lose it to a rich American, we'll pay you $500. And they were selling her to us for $5,000. And she was showing her pornography and sex acts and things like that to desensitize her to get her that ready. So that happens a lot. And so back to the story in the movie itself, I'll tell you just a quick high level of my involvement. So the Homeland Security agent was down in Colombia. He had identified these children, needed some money to rescue them. Mm-hmm. And his boss at Homeland Security wouldn't give him the authorization, just like what you see in the film. He needed to raise about $50,000 to pull these 20 children out of hell. And he quit his job. He had only raised a few hundred dollars. So then the attorney general in Salt Lake in Utah called me and he said, Paul, he said, I know you've donated a lot to child-related charities. Here's one that you can really make a difference. And so myself, some others, Glenn Beck, there were guys who donated some money to make that happen. A bit later, he called me and he said, Paul, I'm in Cartagena. This is the Homeland Security agent. He said, there's not just 20 children. There's more than 50, more than 100 children tied to the same ring. He said, I think we can rescue more than 100 children on the same day at the same time, but I need your help. I said, well, how much do you need? He said, I need you. Can you be in Colombia in 2 days? He knew more about my background than most people. He knew that I could handle myself in a dangerous situation. But more important than that, he needed somebody who could negotiate a multi-million dollar real estate transaction with the traffickers, because the head trafficker had a piece of property that he wanted to develop into a child brothel sex resort. He needed $8 million to build it. And he had connections with all of the others, including this lady who was a former beauty queen and some others. And we needed to bring all the children to the same place at the same time so that we could rescue them all. And so that's what happened. 2 days later, I'm in Colombia. I'm face to face with these guys. Now, unlike me being convinced with just the picture being shown to me, the thing that galvanized my commitment was actually in the country with the traffickers on that first meeting. And they're telling me about their thing. And one of them leans forward and he hands me his phone. He goes, "Pablo, I have a gift for you." I said, "Really, what's your gift?" He gives me his phone and there's a picture of an 11-year-old girl on his phone. He said, "This is Princess." Now, that's the girl that we depicted in the movie as the main one, right? That we're looking at. He said, "This is Princess. She's 11. She's still a virgin. We just took delivery of some. And she's my gift for you for this party." And he started talking about these horrific things I could do to this little girl. And I'm looking at this girl and my heart was beating. I had a lump in my throat. And I thought, unbelievable that this really happens. And I decided whatever it takes, that little girl is going to be home with her family, period. Whatever we have to do to take these guys out. And so of course, you see in the movie, these guys ended up bringing all of these children. 54 children were brought to the party. And we had three separate cities going on at the same time because there were rings that were connected. Over 120 victims recovered in one day, the largest child rescue mission in one day in history that I know of at the time. And what changed my life forever was when we're sitting there at this table. These traffickers are there. We're negotiating this plan of their sex hotel. They had brought these children in, and one of them stands up. And he said, "Pablo, I have a gift for you. I need to go get the gifts that I brought you." And he went in the house. He's in there for about 10 minutes. And you could hear some of the children crying. They were so scared of coming out to meet us. And pretty soon he comes out and he has four virgins scared to death. Three little girls, one little boy. This little boy, they gave him cocaine that morning because he was so scared it was going to hurt. What kind of effed up monster thinks that that's attractive?
Right.
Are you kidding me? And then right. This little girl, the one that he showed me on the picture, the one that they were looking for in the movie, she's standing in front of me, scared to death, shaking. Her hands are shaking. There was makeup that was smeared on her face because she had been crying. And she's looking at me. I'm sitting on a chair. She's standing up, not much taller than I was sitting down. And I'm looking into her eyes. And she was so scared, looking at me like I was the man who was going to defile her. Mm. And that moment, Amber, changed my whole life. I'm looking at that girl and I made a decision at that moment. I made a promise to myself, to God, and to that child, that I would do everything in my power to eradicate that from the face of the earth. And the most beautiful thing that most beautiful part of my life up to that time was after the agents came, stormed the party, arrested everybody, Child Protective Services people came in with the children, and they started laughing. And I was in this section of the house that there was kind of a grass roof palapa, and you could hear what was going on inside the house. And I was there with one of the other operators, and I got super emotional. I've got some video of this when I was, and I told the story 100 times. That sound of freedom was the most beautiful sound that I ever heard, especially compared to the crying that we heard less than half an hour before. So that's how the movie got its name. That's what went down. Now, the jungle scene, there was a little boy, not a little girl that we were after there. He was kidnapped in front of a church house at 4 years old in Haiti. His father was the pastor, and we were following some leads. One of them led us to this place between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. It was a jungle area where the nearest police station was more than 10 hours away, 5-hour drive and a 5-hour hike and horses to get in there. And there was lots of children that were not supposed to be there. because there's this Restivik program in Haiti, and these traffickers would come in and take these kids. And these ones were being used to plant the drugs and mill the drugs and stuff like that in this region. And so we had the Homeland Security agent had tried to go in with some Navy SEALs beforehand into this region. They got chased out with pitchforks and guns, because it was just a difficult area. And so the plan was, how do we get in without it being dangerous? So we decided that we would have an American doctor sponsor a clinic for the children in that area. So I went in with one of my operators dressed as doctors to build relationships with those guys in there and identify where those children were. Now, we didn't get, I didn't have to kill anybody. That shooting scene wasn't a real.
And the time when Tim Ballard in the movie, he wrestled the leader in that jungle area, and he killed him. So that didn't really happen. Yeah, that was more for effect.
That was all effect right there. Yeah.
Thank God. You know what? Because us as an audience, we needed someone to like pay the price for the crime. Yeah, honestly,
exactly. Like, I will tell you this.
Happy he took the head honcho down, who was gonna like defile this girl again. I mean, that was in the film. It was his personal sex slave.
Yeah,
that poor thing. So Tim Ballard didn't really go as the doctor. That was you.
Yeah, that was me. That went in as the doctor into that area.
I'm even more impressed because Tim Ballard was law enforcement, you know, he had law enforcement training, and here you're just a regular citizen. Not that he was law enforcement at the time, because the movie showed he resigned, but that really impresses me that you just a regular person. I mean, I know that you've had Krav Maga training and stuff like that, but regular person going down there to rescue these kids makes to me like, I don't know. You just go raise the level in my like coolness chart.
You're a sweetheart.
Because I was almost like, so after the film, I was asked on another podcast to talk about the film. Mm-hmm. And I was in tears when it got to that part of the film when I'm telling this podcast. I was like, this man went into the jungle with no gun, no radio, no backup, and he rescued these kids. I'm going to cry again. And I said, here you have these men who have a badge or who are military trained, and they refuse to go to these areas. And when good men don't do something, what's going to happen? Evil will prevail. So it's a messed up world. God, the film is just, it just really got to me in a positive way. But like, it's so, the film is so powerful because until middle America sees what these children are going through, they're not going to give two rats about it.
Yeah.
And so that scene was so powerful to me because you had these unarmed people going in there pretending they were something and trying really hard to make sure they weren't caught and to rescue as many kids as they could, when there was a whole bunch of other really strong men in that country that could have done something and didn't.
Here's the backstory of where that part of the story came from. So we drove the 5 hours. There was myself and one of my operators, Andy, who's done that. He's like myself. We've had Krav Maga training. We've done a bunch of missions. We had done 20 plus missions together in about 13, 14 countries at the time. And we had one high level operator in Haiti named Jim. Jim, actually, I went to his funeral about 5 years ago, and that's a whole other story. But there's me, Andy, and Jim. And there
I just want to ask, did he die because of natural causes, or did he die because he's been trying to rescue kids?
It was a very questionable death. He died of a heart attack. He was super healthy. Three other political officials died of the same causes within the same couple weeks. Ugh. We had taken down the top trafficking rings and arrested four corrupt judges as part of this operation. And then he passed very quickly after that.
Oh,
so,
man.
So yes, I'm claiming to the world that yes, there was foul play involved. So there's me, Andy, Jim, and there was two security personnel. These were top level guys in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, that were armed and everything else going with us. They drove the 5 hours to the beginning area of where the jungle was with us. And at the end of that, they're like, okay, this is as far as we go. And we're like, no, that little boy is down in there. That's where he is. We have to go there. And they're like, no, we're not going there. These are the top security guys that Jim could put together. And we're like, no, we're going. They're like, no, nobody's going. You can't go either. That is way too dangerous. This was our exact conversation with them. That's too dangerous to go in there. And me and Abby are like, we just flew all the way from the US. We've been after this little boy. The teams have been after this little boy for a long time. We've got to go in there. That's why we're here. And they're like, no, sorry, this is as far as we go. And we realized that they were scared. They were scared to death. So I pulled Andy aside and I'm like, okay, what do we do? How do we handle this? And we decided, we went back and I said, hey guys, you know what? You're right. This is a really dangerous area. We have all of our stuff here in the car. We don't want to leave the cars here as we go into the jungle. Can you guys stay here and just security, just kind of watch the car and stuff for the next couple of days while we go in there? And they're like, yeah, we'll stay here. So we dealt with their pride issue, had them stay there. And just me, Andy, and Jim went down into the jungle area dressed in our scrubs to go build the relationships with the people down there and let them know that we were going to be setting up a clinic and finding out, if there are any sick kids in the area, et cetera. So
was it like that in the movie where you went from village to village to village to kind of build a reputation? Was that the same way you did it like in the movie? Because it looked like, from what I could understand in the movie, when you were doing the clinic, it appeared that you went to village to village to village. And I was thinking, it wasn't clear in the film, but my idea was, oh, they're probably trying to build a reputation so that when they get to the kids, it's already kind of been talked to that, yes, these Americans have been setting up.
Yeah. So we was actually, the idea? Exactly. So we went in and we met with a few of the people in this jungle area. We let them know, hey, we're going to be bringing in some other doctors. So we were more setting up the stage, and we gave them little cough drops and stuff and checked their temperature and took some nasal swab type things, because you can do a DNA test to identify other children that might be in the area that have been lost from the bigger cities if we can do some DNA testing with them. So we went in there the first time with just us there. Once we created enough of a relationship that was there that we realized it wasn't going to be super dangerous later, then a second trip was set. That second one was a lot bigger. Some medical personnel from Haiti, from Port-au-Prince, that came in, like 4 or 5 doctors and about 15 nurses and stuff to come in to manage this clinic. But really it was us getting now the rest of the team in to be able to have eyes on the area and identify some of the kids.
I applaud you for going after a boy, because it's already traumatic enough when a female gets raped, you know, by a man. But I think it's even more damaging when a man sexually assaults a boy, because it goes against, I don't know, I just think it's more psychological and damaging. And so I appreciate you. And it's, I can't believe how many men want to rape boys. And here's the other thing. Society always talks about the females getting raped. Very few people ever talk about rape of little boys or sexual assault of little boys. Yeah. And they're just as much of a victim as the little girls are. And so I appreciate the highlight in the film. And that little boy, he got my mom's heart going, because I just thought that little boy is the cutest little thing. And my mom heart went out, and I was just like, if that was my cute little boy, I'd want the whole world to go rescue him. And so I appreciate people like you going out and rescuing, because if I was the mom of these victims, I would want everyone to go look. And the fact that people, like we just discussed, were too afraid. Imagine the little kids. At least these are strong men with training, you know, firearms. I'll tell you, little kids can't do anything.
Another story. There's a documentary out called Operation Toussaint that highlights a rescue of 34 children in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And this was one that I was involved with before the jungle one. And in this one, I had worked my way up to what we call a level 3 trafficker. And it was actually a female, and she was holding these children in horrible conditions. And she sticks a key in this door. It's a red door, about 4 feet wide at about 7 feet tall. and opens this steel door, and there's a dirt hallway and multiple cell doors down the left-hand side. No windows, no access other than these small steel doors. She sticks a key in one of these doors, and the first thing I see, it's not even a bed. It's a metal plank that is held to the wall with a chain, so you can fold it up and open it. And there's a dirty, dingy, holy little blanket that was sitting on that bed. And to the left, there was a concrete block. And this little girl, she's 14-year-old girl, was sitting on that concrete block. Now, she was taken when she was 7. Her parents were killed in the earthquake in Haiti. Nobody knew she was alive. And for 7 years, she was sold 5, 10, 15 times a day for sex for 7 years. That little girl looked up at me with this blank look in her eyes, like this happens every day. I told the trafficker, yep, that's what my boss wants. And that little girl didn't speak for 2 weeks after we rescued her. And her first words that she said were, "I didn't think anybody would come." Because she gave up hope 6.5 years ago. And what makes me so mad, Amber, is that every single man who walked through that door for 7 years was there to rape her. Mm-hmm. We were the first, this is me and Andy on this one as well, we were the first guys who walked through that door that didn't have that intention. Mm. Now she's learning to dance. She's got a healthy family that's adopted her, going back to school. Every one of these children have a story like that. And just because the parents of these children don't know where they are or aren't involved doesn't mean that they, or don't have the resources or skill sets that me and the team do, doesn't mean that they love them any less. And even if the parents were involved, it doesn't mean that that child was worth anything less than my own children.
Right. So I want to talk about America because, it's my understanding America is a huge consumer of child raping and trafficking. Are you familiar at all with any child trafficking through CPS?
I will say this. There are flaws in the system everywhere. There's flaws in the system everywhere. The most common way that a child gets brought into trafficking is through a broken foster care program. But you're right. There are lots of situations where the people who are supposed to be protecting the children are not. In fact, this is not that the open border situation should never be a political issue. This is a trafficking issue that we need to be super aware of. So here's the challenge. Right now, if you've got let's say that there's a trafficker and he's in Latin America, and he brings this child that has been taken, this 10, 11-year-old child, 9-year-old child, sends this unaccompanied minor across the border. Mm-hmm. And this minor needs to have a sponsor in the U.S., somebody who's going to take care of them. So they have a phone number of this sponsor. Mm-hmm. There's not background checks that are being done on these sponsors, right? So what could very well happen is that your tax dollars are now used to transport that trafficked child to the new trafficker on American soil. Mm. This is what's happening all over the place in a broken system.
Mm. And then you see Joe Biden, and he just took out a lot of child trafficking words out of law. I could even pull it up for you. And it's just disgusting because our own country isn't doing anything that I can see to protect these kids. It's really disgusting. So I'm going to show you really quick what's come out recently. And then I want to ask you if there's any operations going on here. See, DOJ eliminates language on child sex trafficking from government websites and child victims of prostitution after losing track of 85,000 migrant children. This is the president, supposed president. And so if you go to the resource tab at theamremayshow.com, I have a lot of open source information that I've just collected, articles after articles after articles, that you can see for yourself the problem with. And I don't call it child sex trafficking because that sounds consensual. I changed the word to child rape trafficking because it's not consensual. These kids are getting raped. Are there any operations going on within the United States? Because you see the Podesta files, you see the Jeffrey Epstein's, you see presidents going to Jeffrey Epstein's island. You see actors going there. You see all kinds of people going to the island. And everyone who I've talked to, as soon as you said island in the movie, the first thing that came to mind is Epstein.
Yeah.
And he's not the only one in America that's doing this child trafficking. So are there any operations that you know of that are happening in the United States to rescue these kids from getting raped?
Absolutely. In fact, there are a lot of what I call unsung heroes or hidden heroes from the movie. These are highly decorated former Navy SEALs, Green Berets, special operations guys that worked with FBI and others that retired and got out of their government service and went private, using their skills to take down these rings. In fact, our foundation, the Child Liberation Foundation, people can go to liberatechildren.org, and we actively fund the rescues of and the operations of some of these guys. And a lot of them right now, we have one, Dave. In fact, you should have Dave on your show. Dave is a very well-spoken former Green Beret. He's a badass. And he was there in Colombia as well. And he now has a foundation that they are averaging somewhere between 15 to 20 pedophiles a month that they are arresting. Now, to put that into perspective, taking out one pedophile isn't just saving one child. Chances are they will abuse up to 100 to 150 children in their lifetime. So by getting them off the streets, these guys that are creating that demand, we're saving hundreds, thousands of children through these operations. And so I'll get you the contact. You would love to have Dave on your show.
Yes, I would. Please give me his contact. Yeah.
Now, what
I loved about your film right from the beginning, and we're talking about Sound of Freedom for anyone just joining us. We're talking about the Sound of Freedom. And we have Paul Hutchinson, the executive producer of the Sound of Freedom. He's also portrayed in the film as the very wealthy guy who was going to build this hotel for the children. In the very beginning, and this is what got me, like the gut punch from the very beginning. So you have two Homeland Security agents, and they, you know, Tim Ballard's really happy. You know, he just arrested this pedophile. Job well done. But then his partner was just like, but how many kids did he rescue? And that really sunk in with the character Tim Ballard in the film, Jim Caviezel in the film. And that really hit me hard too. And I'm thinking, okay, praise God that law enforcement goes after these men. And I'm not saying they don't try, but are these men also trying to find the kids after they've arrested the pedophiles that you just told me about? Are they also trying to locate the children as well?
Like we spoke about earlier, a lot of these children that are being trafficked are not down in Latin America in some sex ring down there. Those ones, yes, we're actively taking those down as well. And what we will do every time that we arrest one of these traffickers or a pedophile, I know from the operations that I did overseas and in Latin America that we would have them get life in prison, but we would allow them to plea down to 25 years if they could give us the names of the American pedophiles that have been down there. The same thing will happen here. You put these guys in prison for life and then say, all right, where's all the kids? Where are they coming from? Where's your supply line and stuff? Now, yes, they should still stay in jail for life. But, sure, you know, if we can take them out of solitary confinement, whatever it is, to figure out where they're getting the kids, and we can get their computers. And there's a lot of work that's done to try to identify the children as well. So yes, it's a combined effort. Here's the problem. If you just I realized over the last 10 years, every single time that we went undercover and we found 10 children, 20 children plus, and we rescued them, if not enough was being done to fix the demand, then we created a vacuum.
Correct.
And 20 more children were being sucked into the deepest recesses of hell. And so you have to fix the demand side. You can't just rescue the children. So fixing the demand side is finding the pedophiles for sure. But what if, now here's just a boom, aha moment. People ask me, Paul, how can you go face to face with a guy selling you a child and not mm-hmm. have them see just the anger and hatred in mm-hmm. your eyes? Mm-hmm. And I tell him, I said, there's a part of me that actually feels really bad for him. How can you feel bad for him? They're selling an 8-year-old. No, I will I will do everything in my power to ensure that they never hurt another child again. But what I wish more than anything is that we had a time machine and I could go back 5 years or 10 years or 15 years before they ever, ever, ever hurt a child mm-hmm. and figure out what was going on. Most of them were raped as children themselves. Now that does not justify their behavior, because the majority of people who experience child sexual trauma, the majority of them grow up to be motivated to protect children. But about 1 out of 3 people end up becoming contact offenders themselves and passing their trauma on. So what if we could take that demographic, those teenagers, those young adults who deal with all this trauma, and before they pass it on in the form of verbal abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, before they ever, ever pass that trauma on, what if we could get them the help that they needed to shed that trauma? Mm-hmm. Every single one of us has things that we want to get rid of that mm-hmm. that don't serve us, that we're out of integrity at some point in our life, some much, much worse than others if they were raped as a child, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So if we can help fix that, then I believe we can help save millions and millions of children. That's what liberating humanity is all about. All of my social media is all liberating.humanity. We have a new website that's coming out that's liberating-humanity.com.org, or you can go to the liberatechildren.org. But those are all about not just rescuing the children, but figuring out how to give people the tools they need to help those other people in their life who may have been victims as children in their own homes, so that we can fix the demand side as well.
Now, let me ask you this. How does porn play into the whole child rape trafficking thing, or does it? I mean, maybe
absolutely.
Talk about that for a minute.
For a long time, Amber, I believe that pornography was the source, that's what was leading to it. I thought, you know, that the second that you take a woman from a divine feminine to an object, you start going down a dark road. Correct. And for some of these guys, they get addicted. And that addiction, now everybody who's listened to the show has seen pornography. Just because you've seen pornography doesn't mean you can become a pedophile. But every single one of these guys that were arrested started out with a hardcore addiction in some way. And so what'll happen is they need something harder to have that same fix, like a hardcore drug. And for some of them, harder is more grotesque or rape videos. And for some of them, it's a little bit younger. And pretty soon they're fantasizing about something they wouldn't have even thought was attractive 5 years ago. And then they're acting out on these horrific fantasies. So yes, that's a contributing factor. However, even that is a symptom of something much more massive and much more broken. It's the desensitization of sexuality that happens from this crap that's coming from mainstream media and from Hollywood. You have to ask yourself, why did we get so much pushback in bringing this film to the world? Why
especially
did we
from Disney? I heard Disney held on to your movie for several years. Disney, a child company, a company that makes cartoons, has a theme park.
You have to ask yourself what their agenda is. And you have to look carefully at how they are silently feeding your children and yourself with their own narrative that is leading you down a road that now, from not even just in the US, but globally, people are now trying to fight against the normalization of children that are getting sex change operations at third grade. Are you kidding me? I'm here in Latin America right now. And this, I was with a bunch of high level political guys last night, and they were telling me about these massive marches that were happening because of all of these families that are saying, no, we don't want to make it so that our kids can get sex change operations in third grade without our permission. Are you kidding me? And so that narrative as a whole is coming from the social media that's being controlled, Hollywood that's being controlled, and all of this stuff that's coming into our minds. And so those are the guys that now front page over the last 3 weeks were the ones that were stopping us from coming out and are continuing to stop this message from coming out to the world.
Oh, and it's here in the US. Let me show you this article that says, parents, don't let Washington State take your children away. So here it is, a new legislation. Let's see. Here's SB 5599 is the most shocking and extreme bill I've ever seen. And that's why I have spearheaded the referendum 101. It's keeping the Washington State constitution allowance to revoke the horrible legislation, because what the current law does, it enables minors 13 and older to obtain puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, body mutilating surgeries without parental knowledge or consent. But the SB 5599, minors of any age who are seeking gender affirming care will be hidden from their parents, wow, placed in host homes so they can obtain all these medical surgeries given by the state appointed guardians. They're trying to circumvent parents altogether. They want to get parents out of the way because they want your children. It's disgusting. I've talked to men who transition into females and transition back. You know what these men had in common? They were sexually assaulted, and nobody dealt with the sexual assault that they had. And they were sexually assaulted by other men. Yeah. So I think when you are thinking of transgender, I'm thinking it's because, and I'm basing it on what these men have told me. And I know a man who was in the Satanic Church, found himself in the Satanic Church at a young age, not really realizing he was also sexually assaulted, and he was also sent into child porn. These men had in common that they were so disgusted with themselves. They wanted to do anything to get rid of what this disgust about themselves. And it's sad because someone hurt them and now they're disgusted with themselves, when it's really has nothing to do with them, has everything to do with that victim. But going back to what you said, they need help with the trauma. And so two out of the three men thought, if I can look like a female, then I'm no longer this disgusting human being. And they realized it didn't change anything, because the assault is still very mentally there. Changing the outward appearance didn't fix how they felt on the inside. And then they were really upset because now these men couldn't have children down the road. When they finally found some healing, found a family, the ability for them to have a child was taken from them. And so what you just said is very, very relevant. They're trying to indoctrinate the kids with the child porn in the schools, with the transgender on TV, the reading of at libraries with these show guys that dress up like women drag queens. I've never seen so much an assault on trying to sexualize kids than I do right now. What does that say about our society? Are we so disgusting that this is what we desire, is to sleep with children, to rape children? Is that where we are? I'm going to hope to say no. There's much more on our side, your and I side, that are saying no. And this film is so crucial to waking up middle America. Everybody needs to see this film. I've told podcasters that when I did reviews on the show on your movie, this is the most important film of our lifetime. And so once we get fired up after watching your film and we're hearing stories of your operations and what happened and how these children finally have a hero or rescuer, what are we supposed to do? How do we help as middle America? How do we help protect children? What should we look out for? How do we get involved? Okay, we've seen the film. Now we're fired up. Now what's next for us?
Now, the answer is more simple than you can imagine. It's hug your kids. The most that the highest risk children for being trafficked are ones from broken families, ones who have only a mother or a father, that they're never there, or maybe they were raped as a child by their uncle or whatever, and then they're being trafficked from there. So keeping your kids safe is having a close relationship with them. You need to have a close enough relationship with your child that they can come to you and say, hey, you know what? I don't really feel comfortable hugging Uncle Harry anymore. It just doesn't make me feel good. And you need to respect that and honor that and honor those feelings. I have a book coming out in a few months called Are You Listening? Not Are You Listening With My Hand On My Ear, but Are You Listening With My Hand On My Heart? Because that still small voice of truth is something that rings true with children and adults as well. So that's number one, is having a relationship with them where you can protect them. Realize this, you can walk out in your front porch right now. You look right, you look left. Statistically, about one in every four of those houses is a dangerous place for children.
Oh.
Right? One out of every four women in America have been a victim of sexual abuse as a child, and most of them in their own homes, right? Now, with men, it's a little bit less. It's one in every five, 20% at some time in their life. But even then, 25% of them, literally 200 million men in the world, it was under the age of 10 years old, most of them in their own homes. And so if we're going to fix this problem, yes, we can go on and donate. People can donate to liberatechildren.org, and we have teams that are still doing the rescue missions and taking down pedophiles, etc. But if you want to get involved in your own safety of your own children, then make sure that you have a healthy relationship with them. Realize that the most likely chance of them being abused is not being taken and sold in a brothel in Thailand, but it's likely in the neighbor's house or at your brother-in-law's house, et cetera. And then beyond there, there's a lot of, for example, social media is something to be really cautious about with your children. We had a number of operations where the traffickers were identifying children, well, 12, 13, 14-year-old girls that were traveling with some older siblings it didn't look like they had parental guidance in these, you know, in these beach cities and whatever. And they would reach out to them and say, hey, I noticed you're in Cancun or wherever, and I'm a guide. I can take you out on my boat. Well, this is how they were bringing in some of these children. They would drug them. They would take them. They would, you know, especially if they were from a poor family or broken family, nobody was going to look for them anyway, then that's how they're bringing them in. So be super aware of what's going on a social media standpoint with your kids, and if they're public and what kind of things they're posting and locations and everything else, just to keep them safe as well.
Well, that's a good point. That's a really good point, because I want to make sure that this film creates a movement, and it's amazing. I think it's one of the number one films out there. And
yeah,
it was great that it beat Indiana Jones on the 4th of July. That was fantastic. I don't know where it's ranking right now, but I know it's been, the numbers keep growing with the people coming to see the film. So it's still out in theaters right now as you and I are talking. So if people want to go see the film, where do they go get the tickets?
Yeah, you can go to Angel Studios. Now this is important too. This is kind of exciting. We weren't able to get the distribution with the controls in place with big Hollywood and big distribution. So this film is being brought to the people by the people, right? So Angel Studios is who brought us the TV series, The Chosen. Mm-hmm. It's something where you can go on and you can pre-purchase tickets and pass it forward to other people, et cetera, which is super exciting. And we came out, here's what's exciting. Our numbers this Friday were bigger than the numbers we had on the opening Friday of the, wow, of the 4th of July weekend, right? That's 3 weeks ago. They told us this, I got this text from a friend. He says, he's from one of the co-investors. He said, they told us it was going to be an impossible mission to compete with the blockbusters who had $300 million bid budgets. Then we beat Mission Impossible and Indiana Jones, proving that anything is possible.
That's so great. That is so great.
So these guys had huge budgets, $300 million budgets. We had a $14.5 million budget. And day one, we were higher than all of them. Why? Wow. Because this is a grassroots movement with good people coming forward saying, no, I need to spread this message to other people so that together we can come and say, okay, what do we need to do to change this?
How long ago was this film made?
We finished it about 5 years ago. So when my very first meeting with Alejandro and Eduardo, the producer and director at that gala, when I first met them, that was about 8 years ago when I shared the story with them. We started down the road. We actually wrote the script at my cabin. We locked them up there for like a week and they all just were writing and storyboarding the whole thing. That was about seven years ago when we finished all of that. And then from there, we finished the filming fairly quickly. It took us about 3 months worth of filming, but the film was ready to go. 5 years ago, it was ready for distribution, ready to go. And the problem was that Fox International was one of our earlier investors and they had distribution rights with it. And then they were bought by Disney and they said, no, we're not going to do that. And so we had to figure out how to fix that, buy them out, bring in some other investors, et cetera, to make that happen. And then after we had that, then we had multiple people, including one of the former executives at Disney that locked it up for months. He said, yep, I'm going to bring in $20 million and do distribution. So we did a deal with him. And then like, I don't remember how many, three, 6 months later, he finally just disappeared. And we're like, really? You just locked it up for 6 months with nothing, just And we don't know if it's because he was doing it on purpose or maybe he went to the higher ups and realized, the powers that be in this world aren't going to let this out. So this happened over and over again. And situations like, Netflix turned us down. Netflix brought us Cuties. You know what that's about? Are you kidding me? So they put Cuties, they're deciding what narrative we have, right? They bring us Cuties, but they don't bring us, really. Well, it wasn't meant to be. I couldn't believe that. Yeah, wow. It wasn't meant to be. It was meant to be a grassroots movement with millions and millions of good people, not only in the U.S., but all around the world. Here I'm in Latin America, and there's people everywhere. The movie's only been out 3 weeks, and there's people everywhere that are pushing for it, that are actually having protests in the streets saying, we want it here. How soon can we have it here? And pushing back against their governments that aren't wanting to have it. It's super exciting to see.
Is this movie gone worldwide or just here in the United States?
It's just opened in the U.S. so far, but we'll be in Latin America within the next couple months. And then we'll be nation worldwide after that. And then it'll be available on Angel's platform after that.
I believe there's going to be a huge revolution in Latin America because a lot of child trafficking. Yes, it happens here in the United States. We talked about that, but it does happen in Latin America. And I think this is going to be such a great revolution to free all these kids.
Yeah.
So I hope that you guys will be able to have that grassroots movement because I'm sure the powers that be in Latin America are going to try and stop it, just like they were trying to stop here. And it disgusts me so much. Like, I'm sure you had to be disgusted. Like, why are you stopping a film like this? Everyone should want to put a film out like this. It tells you exactly who these people are if they're trying to stop your film. It just,
it
tells you everything you need to know. Yeah. Everything you need to know. Well, I want to thank you so much, Paul. Please come back on my show. Give us updates. I'd love to have updates. I'm so, so grateful you decided to come on my show. I was so looking forward to this interview. So thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Amber. Appreciate you. And your audience.
So many of us think that sleep is a luxury. Sleep is not a luxury. Sleep is a necessity. It's going to help you restore all your bodily functions, help your body recover, recoup. It's something that we need to function on a daily basis. We need to feel restful. And if you're not feeling restful because you're not getting a proper night's sleep, then I have something just for you. I just absolutely adore Dr. Stella. She comes out with some great supplements. And here's one of the newest ones she came out with, and it's Kobe Sleeps. So if you have trouble going to sleep at night and you want a more restful night's sleep, go to drstellamd.com, go to her supplements section and purchase this and use promo code AmberMay, one word, and you'll save some money there. Not only does it help promote a more restful night's sleep, it helps with stress and joint function. So if you have stress, you have joint function, you're also not getting a good restful night's sleep, you need to go to drstellamd.com, get these Kobe Sleep Bites right now, and save money by using promo code AmberMay.
Looks like you've been sleeping well.
Megan, he's back. The MyPillow guy.
And you're looking good.
Still feeling good.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, we've got the best pillow ever, MyPillow 2.0.
The best sleep just got even better. Whether you have a MyPillow or not, you need to get the brand new MyPillow 2.0. Call or go to MyPillow.com now. Use your promo code, and for a limited time, when you buy one, you'll get a second one absolutely free.
Thank you for joining us today on the Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Socially Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on the Amber May Show.